The Nerd Dash Podcast is a production of Vinting Machine Media.
So one day, we were having this conversation about some of my favorite movies from my childhood. We were talking about Jaws and Alien, Predator, you know, the Poltergeist, you know, all of those old, you know, horror slasher random movies. And you, my friend, divulged that you haven't seen any of these. And we have to solve these problems because if you haven't seen a movie that's 40 years old, that is acclaimed as one of the hallmarks of not even just film, but our culture.
Yeah, all right, fine. All right.
So, I gave you my sets. What did you think of Alien?
Well, I literally just saw Alien about 15 minutes ago. It ended, and it was good. Of course it was good. It was very tense. It started out in the daylight, so I put the blinds over the windows, and mm-hmm. I got the house as dark as I could. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was tense. It was scary. It was a fine film. Funny you kind of led with the tropes, you know. It's funny when you kind of see an old movie, especially one that has lived in pop culture for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You see the old cliches, you see the tropes, and you're like, that's a cliche now. That's a cliche today, but this movie pioneered it.
That's where this came from. Like, this movie, I don't know if you've YouTubed the trailers for this movie. The entire advertisement for this movie was just this, like, sun rising over the horizon of a planet, and all it says is, in space, no one can hear you scream.
Yeah.
And then it just flashed the title Aliens as it was, like, glowing up, and that was it. And you're like, what the fuck's this movie about? It's like, what's going to happen to these people? I don't think it's going to be good. This is ominous. What am I going to go see? And no one knew what to expect. Even the cast didn't know what to expect out of the movie.
I would imagine some of that has to do with the way they made trailers in 1979. but for sure, this is a movie I should have seen.
Mm-hmm.
The hell's about that box?
Dallas?
You're going to have to hold your position for a minute. I've lost the signal.
What? You sure?
Look around. Are you sure that it's not there? I mean, it's got to be around there somewhere.
All right, so some of the things that kind of stick out for me. I liked the look of it. I liked the sort of claustrophobic aesthetic. You know, the ship is uncomfortable mm-hmm. looking.
Oh yeah,
the ship feels grimy. It feels lived in.
It's cheaply made.
It doesn't feel like a home. Everybody feels sort of on edge around it.
Mm-hmm.
The one part, you know, sort of the galley that they sit around the table that had kind of a communal feel.
It's like the only well-lit room in the whole ship. It's
definitely felt like a safe zone.
Yeah.
But the rest of the ship, you know, the bowels of this, a mining ship, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a mineral transport. So basically it's like that. So the ship itself is only just like this little, like, shuttlecrafty kind of size thing. And the big giant thing that you saw was just like basically a couple of city blocks worth of like mining ore and industrial equipment. They're kind of like it's like a tow truck in space. They're just bringing it from one point to another.
So like an oil rig or something.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They're just dragging this resource machine from one point to another. And it's, you know, they're working for the company and they're always complaining about how they're not getting any work or any things out of it and how cheap it is. They're like, oh, how much more time do we have to spend in cryo space? You know, I'm going to miss my, you know, the birthdays and all, because they're out for like 9 years because we haven't developed faster than light travel yet and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, so they've been out for a while.
Yeah, it's like a 3 or 4 year trip, and they cryo sleep them so that way they don't have to feed them.
That was cool. Obviously, the idea that they are by themselves is deliberate. You know, a clearly it's a haunted house story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they are in the middle of nowhere. They only have themselves to rely on. They're trapped in this claustrophobic setting.
Yeah.
A part of a no-win scenario. You know, they are on their own.
Yep. They don't know what to expect. They don't know how to expect. And all of a sudden they get this, you know, this monster, this perfectly, you know, this killing machine. And they said there's no way possibly out of this. There's no will. You know, it's just creepy and it's wet and it's like, this thing was tailor-made for this environment, and we are not. It's at home anywhere, and we need to adapt and struggle against it.
Maybe that is sort of explored more in the sequels, which I have not seen yet. I don't know if I got the notion that the alien is sort of like a perfect killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
It had no motivation other than, you know, it ate things.
Yeah.
I don't know. It you know, they didn't make it intelligent in a way. You know, they didn't try to humanize it in quotations. No. They didn't give it any characterization.
No.
It was just a force to be dealt with.
It's essentially the man versus nature, you know, trope. It's, you know, the, we don't know what it is. We don't know how to stop it. We don't know what's going on with it. And it's perfectly at home doing everything.
Right.
Now, one of the big kind of like ways about and things that people have been discussing is, I know you said you saw the Prometheus movie.
I did.
So the idea was those like giant aliens created these other aliens to use as kind of like a biological weapon. Like you throw these things onto a planet and they just wipe out everything.
Yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of retcons lore.
Oh yeah, now. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's a pretty good jumping off point. My exposure to Alien prior to an hour and a half ago was this. Mm-hmm. I have seen Prometheus a couple of years ago. I don't really remember anything about it other than it was sort of mediocre.
Yeah.
It played like a kind of a crappy slasher flick.
Yes, it did.
The characters were kind of dumb. They made stupid decisions. Any Easter eggs that might have been dropped for Alien fans went completely over my head. And the only other exposure I've ever had to Alien is Spaceballs.
Oh yeah, but that's I think if you have a launching off point, that's one of the best ones possible.
I've seen Spaceballs dozens of times.
Oh yes.
And I've seen it since I was a little kid. And I, even then, I had no idea what they were lampooning. Mm-hmm. with the alien coming out of his chest.
Yep. Not again.
Yeah, and you know, John Hurt again.
Yeah.
So that's it. I went into this just about neutral. And it was cool. It was nice to see a well-done genre film, clearly deserving of the acclaim.
Yeah.
that it gets. You know, it was solid completely through. It was scary, atmospheric. I was kind of on edge. They keep the tension, you know, really, really screwed down tight. I have very little negative to say about it. It was quite good.
Which is why when I suggest you watch a movie, that you watch them.
I don't know. You've been trying to get me to watch The Flash. I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's fine. I just want someone else's opinion on it besides Kevin Smith, who doesn't shut up about it. I just want to know if it's actually good or if it's just something I'm passing the time with.
You're listening to the Nerd Dash Podcast. You can find us on iTunes if you haven't already. Please subscribe and leave a comment. You can also connect with me on Twitter at Billy Donahoe. Now let's get back to my science fiction education with Alien on the Nerd Dash Podcast. So what do you like about it then?
So
give me what you like.
This Alien is one of the only classical horror films that I actually really enjoy. Like I hate all like the Friday the 13th and the Nightmare on Elm Streets and like the psychological serial killer and things like that really don't do it for me. But I don't know if it's just the fact that this is set in space and it's interesting and different like that, but I love the feel. I love the, you know, the cinematography. I love the tone of the movie. I like how there's so much minuscule detail that has become extraordinarily important. Because before this film, this was his first directing credit. Everything he'd done before
Ridley
that was...
Ridley Scott.
Yeah, Ridley Scott was commercials. So all he did was set up, you know, he did like, you know, toothpaste ads, and he did all these things, but all he had to do was 30 seconds. So he wanted to make everything pop and stand out. So when you saw the, you know, the scene where they like belay down into that little nest area,
yeah,
they built that. That was like carpentered and wooded, and like you walked into this big room and that's what it was. Like they didn't cut corners, they didn't work, and he did it all with a terribly, in a, you know, cheap budget too. It's like this was like a, the studio wasn't really giving it much in the ways of a chance, because this was, you know, post Star Wars, and people didn't like, I don't want a scary alien movie, I just want, you know, aliens are kind of goodish things in these films, and you know what to understand about them. And then all of a sudden they're like, nope, this is what we're doing.
They wanted pulp, which this is not.
Yeah. And then so because Alien was originally going to become a movie like in the like 77, 76, like around Planet of the Apes time. And then they were like, and then all of a sudden they're like, ooh, science fiction is selling a little bit more, it's getting cooler. And they're like, oh, we got to have another property in here somewhere. And they were digging through and they're like, oh, 20th Century is like, hey, we got another film here. Let's see if we can capitalize off on this. And they're like, let's just put it out. You know, see, you know, let's give it to a relatively low listing, you know, who cares if it's wrong director. Let's give it a crew that people who nobody knows anybody on it. And let's just like make a film and see if people, you know, give us their money. And they did. And continue to do so.
Was it a success when it came out?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard my father always tells me stories about when he went to go see it in the theaters, and you know, he'd take, you know, he kind of did the old, you know, like the, you know, trick the girl into seeing the scary movie kind of
classic.
Thing. Oh, the classic, you know, all the classic dad maneuvers. But, you know, there were stories of people like leaving the theater, like vomiting and like, you know, because it was these scenes and these things were never really shown before. Because, you know, back in those days, there was only G movies and PG movies. There was no R, there was no, so this movie originally had a, like a PG rating on it. It was kind of like, yeah, you should probably, if you're going to bring your kids to it, you might want to have an adult present.
Right.
And
I can imagine lots of kids saw this movie then. And maybe they shouldn't have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I remember seeing this movie, I think I was 8. I saw this, and then I saw Silence of the Lambs, and then I saw Arachnophobia in the same day. Like that was like one night of watching movies.
And
Arachnophobia was the only one that really bothered me.
I haven't seen that one either.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a, now it's kind of a little more of like a funny, scary movie where they're trying to cut themselves a little bit non-serious, but it's a story about like a million spiders attacking this little like house. And if you don't like spiders, it's not really a great film for you to watch. But I don't care. Grew up in the woods. Who cares?
And it mostly holds up. You know, the technology is minimal. There was some techno babble which I don't care for too much. You know, a lot of times that becomes instantly dated. You know, computers made typewriter clicking sounds. The robot was cool. I liked it. You know, clearly it was a practical effect. You know, it was weird. It looked like just like surgical rubber.
Yep.
That, you know, that they threw together. It's not what I kind of expected a robot to look like.
Yeah.
You know, I've been spoiled by modern examples of robots in movies.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like Ex Machina, for example, mm-hmm. something that's elegant, you know, a strong sense of industrial design. This felt this felt expected for 70s special effects. It was cool. Yeah. I liked it. It felt organic.
And you know why it felt organic? Because it was made out of spaghetti, milk, and cornmeal. Yeah. That's what they did all the fluids. That's what all those little tubings was. It was just literally, they just overboiled spaghetti, covered it with milk and stuff. That way it had that kind of viscousy, gooey look. That's what was, you know, coming out of his mouth. That's what it was kind of covering all over him. There was,
and
like,
his sweat, too, was white.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, too, now I want to watch it again to see all of his little ticks. Because yeah. he was a good character, the doctor. Ash is his name.
Yeah. So remember, one of the things I always, when you want to watch this thing again, draw to the chest bursting scene.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going, like, everyone's reacting. He's kind of coldly just kind of watching. He doesn't really react until the thing erupts, and he goes, oh. He has, like, this looks on his face like, that's new. And that's something that I might want to. And that's when he, like, reports to the company, being like, look what I found.
Well, I figured, you know, throughout the first half of the movie, his motivations are questionable. And I was ready to explain it away, or I felt like the movie was going to explain it, being that he's a doctor,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of a mad scientist in a way.
Yeah.
You know, here he is presented with this huge scientific discovery, and he's gonna ride the line. He's not gonna follow the rules because of curiosity, because of wanting to see what happens.
Yeah. Did he intentionally expose these people to more of them? Was he doing this on purpose? And that's kind of one of those, like, like, is he breaking the quarantine rules? But actually, he was following the letter of, you know, because the company, all of their prerogatives rescinded. We don't care. We want this thing back. Like, everything else is sacrificable. You, the ship, everything. But we want this organism back for study.
It reminded me of 2001 with HAL.
Yeah.
You know, the robot ambassador to the company, in quotations, that is going to follow the rules to the letter and put the humans in jeopardy because they stand in the way of the directive.
Yeah, the goals, yeah.
Yep. Yep. I don't know. That was a good twist.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it coming. It was satisfying, it was cathartic at the end. I really liked, for some reason, I really liked the look of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the low ceiling, the sort of cramped, confined quarters. It looked like everybody kind of lived there in their space.
It's their own little, like, okay, you know, I'm the co-pilot, I sit here, and then that's all you do, and then I'm the navigator, and I sit here, and then we have, like, the, you know, the brown shirts downstairs, you know, like, literally just, like, running all the machines. And
but, you know, they did a really good job of making the ship feel lived in. You know, the way the characters kind of relaxed into their seats, like, you know, like their, like, it was like their asses, you know, fit that seat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've sat there for years. They know how to do it. You know, it felt lived in.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was like a really cool detail that I just really liked.
Yeah. I also, I don't know if you know or picked up on these things, but there's also a lot of kind of, like, I always felt like kind of like Firefly-y moments inside of it, where you're kind of like,
big time.
Yeah. And then you're like, that's kind of where he, you know, Joss got his, like, inspirations of, like, okay, like, everything that happened, with the exception of when they left the ship for, like, 2 hours and came back, took place on the, it was a small little drama, everything was self-contained, everything was explored. When they actually wrote the screenplay, they didn't give any specific traits or things to the actual, like, everyone was last name, you know, there was Dallas and, you know, why, and everyone was their own, just a last name. So the idea was you could cast this as however you wanted. The writer was just kind of like, look, I just want this out here, like, I don't care, you can, you know, the decided to go with the cool angle of, you know, having, you know, Ripley be a woman, and how the, you know, the struggles and the strong feminism ideals of, like, the strong independence, and how she didn't always make the best decisions, but she was tough as nails and steadfast and determined. And that's another really cool.
And challenged too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, faced with faced with real obstacles that they that Ripley and the crew had to talk out, had to come up with solutions for.
Yeah, like,
you know, on the fly.
Yeah, like, I don't want you on, you know, what was he exposed to? What happened? You can't go on the ship. That's against protocol.
Yeah. I liked that she was she played by the rules, or she wanted to.
Yep.
It reminded me of a moment in, you ever see Sunshine?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's similar. Of course it's inspired, now that I have seen Alien, all of these all of these movies are just falling into place as inspired by Alien. But there's a moment in the movie, they're flying to the sun with a huge nuclear weapon.
Yes, I have
to restart it.
Yeah, I have seen,
because it's dying.
Yeah, yeah.
And they meet up with the first ship that, you know, went offline. They lost contact with it, and they find it again. And the crew starts talking about pluses and minuses, options, and they defer to the scientist, to the science officer, and they say, "You are in charge of this part of the mission. You make the call."
Mm-hmm.
And they in Alien, they did that as well. And it got them into trouble because they trusted Ash, whose loyalties were questionable.
Yeah,
unbeknownst,
of course,
to nobody.
Yeah,
which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It lended a who can you trust element there. You know, it contributed to the uneasiness of the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of the actual creature itself? Like, you didn't see it a lot. There was not a ton of detailing on it.
That was good. I liked that it was kept in the dark. You know, some parts you could clearly tell it was a dude in a costume.
Yep, a guy in a rubber suit.
Yep. Sometimes you just got to have a guy in a costume. But I liked it, I guess. I guess it didn't really matter what it looked like or mm-hmm. what it was. You know, it's a monster movie, not about the monster.
Yeah.
You know, it's about the characters overcoming, dealing with a threat. So it looked fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine.
Yeah.
I recognize what it looks like because I've seen it in pop culture since.
Of course.
Okay. It's got a mouth in a mouth that I recognize.
Yeah. It gets better, believe it or not, as technology progresses.
Oh, yeah.
So in Aliens, they look a lot cooler. And they kind of go back and forth about, like, why they look, you know, there's all, you know, neckbeards on the internet talking about why they look different and all this sort of stuff. In the third one, they actually, instead of infesting humans, now it's one version of the, there's two versions, there's a director's and there's a like a theatrical cut. In the theatrical cut of Aliens 3, they did it with the facehuggers implanted into a cow. But in the director's cut, which I think makes way more sense, they implanted into dogs. So think of that alien creature, but now smaller, lighter, more streamlined, travels in a pack, things like that. You're like, wow, that's a lot more terrifying.
Could kill him. I won't even take that chance. Just cut it off and now.
You take responsibility?
Yes, I'll take the responsibility. Now. Get him out of
here. Where do you want to do this?
I'm making a decision just below the knuckle. Mm-hmm.
So one part I really, really like, one part that really kind of stands out for me was the face hugger.
Mm-hmm.
So their first introduction to the alien is this, the thing that it grabs his face, grabs John Hurt's face, keeps him alive, but I impregnates him. I guess.
Yeah. Lays an egg.
But I thought that was really, really well done. You know, there, it was, it was like a dire situation, but everything was quiet in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a weird, you know, it was a great way to sort of dial up the tension.
Yeah, you take away action, and then you have more quiet. Like, what's happening? What's going on? Like, there's no sound. There's no effect. Like, what is going on?
And
they do a great job at that.
What I was thinking about when I was watching it, they do a really good job of kind of doling out information mm-hmm. at really kind of the right points. You know, the movie starts with a quiet ship. You know, you're thinking, is this a flashback? Is this you know, happening now? Has the incident already happened? Have people left? And then, you know, just as you start to kind of put an idea in your head, the computer flickers mm-hmm. and the crew is woken up.
Yeah.
And you realize that, oh, okay, you know, I'm starting this journey with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a minute or so later, it flips it kind of on its head again, and you realize that the crew has woken up after, you know, doing a job. They're tired. They're familiar with each other. You know, when they know who they're coworkers, essentially.
Yeah.
So they kind of shoot the shit with each other. It flipped my expectations around a little bit. You know, I was sort of expecting a fresh-faced crew that didn't really know who each other were.
Yeah.
They were introducing themselves to the ship, to the mission. Maybe they were going to be given kind of a dossier from a friendly computer or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just contributed to the realistic lived-in aesthetic of the movie.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
I also liked the realism that they kind of implanted and went into. So everyone's favorite, you know, the chest bursting scene. They did not tell any of the actors, with the exception of, you know, the one
John Hurt, yeah.
How this was happening. So what they did was they're like, okay, this is what's going to happen. You're going to need dinner. These things are going to happen, and then the alien's going to show up. And they're like, oh, okay. So they don't know what's going on. Like, a lot of like the looks of like, you know, the kind of like, surprise this look is kind of like, is he actually is he okay as a person? And I cannot remember her name. The short blonde haired woman. She's actually I can never remember the word for this either. Wow, I'm doing terrible right now. But she has the phobia of blood.
Oh,
and she gets a face full of it. So that is her actually reacting. Apparently they took that first take of that shot and that thing. But apparently it took her like 15, 20 minutes to calm her down for the rest of the scene. To like, she was just like flipping out the whole time, like, ah, like shaking, and like she just kind of curled up in a ball and collapsed. And they're like, ooh, this is good. Wow. Like, this is real.
Guerrilla filmmaking.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure she had a lot to talk about in contract-wise with that. Yeah.
No. I don't think she did, because remember, this is the 70s. We didn't care about people.
It was the Wild West back then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where Han Solo shoots first.
you bring up Star Wars, I guess. You know, and...
Of course I bring up Star Wars. Star Wars is awesome.
Obviously. What is the timeline with this movie? Did this come out before... I guess it came out after 2001, right? 2001 was the latest 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was like the last gasp of the 70s before the 80s.
79.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that a little bit. They have similar feels. There are similar plot points.
Yeah.
This one I really like. So in a lot of science fiction crew-based movies, even now, they all sort of do a weird plot tack in the third act.
Mm-hmm.
They go into a sort of a cerebral mode. They, you know, in 2001, A Space Odyssey, they go through the Stargate, and Bowman sees, you know, a giant acid trip, essentially, whatever it is.
And the origins of humanity and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. In Sunshine, they do something similar. You know, he has this experience in the sun, and there's also a monster at the end. In Event Horizon, there's a similar third act. What I really liked about this movie is that the ending, the climax, the payoff stayed within the scope of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think Ripley gets into the escape shuttle.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course the alien has found its way onto it.
Of course, yeah.
Is it dying? It's kind of laying in that corner.
So the idea, at least that a lot of us, because there's no real concrete evidence of what these things do and why they do it. But the general idea is that they're kind of, you've seen Jaws, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Okay, I don't have to yell at you about that one. It's the perfect eating machine. You know, it makes little baby sharks. It swims around, and then it eats.
Yeah.
An alien runs around, makes more of itself, and eats.
Yep.
So what it's doing is it's run out of things to eat, and it doesn't have a place to go, so it's just going in a corner just to kind of like take a nap and wait for more things to show up.
See, I think it was dying, and I'll tell you why. And they even hint at it in the beginning of the movie. They're talking about what it needs to survive, and they say they're kind of going through all of the environmental
mm-hmm.
elements that, you know, a body kind of needs to be in stasis, you know, temperature, oxygen, food, and they discuss what they could change about the environment to give themselves an edge over the alien.
Yeah.
So I would guess that the alien grew up in the Nostromo.
Yeah.
So it's become acclimated to that environment.
It's very correct.
But in the shuttle, maybe, you know, the air has been stale for as long as the ship has been there. Nobody's ever been in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if it finds its way into this new small environment, it's suffocating or it's, you know, it's dying in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems okay.
Yeah.
It was writhing. It looked like in pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throughout the movie, it was spry. It was agile. And in the end, all of a sudden in this new environment, it was not.
Yeah.
I think that, to me, that makes sense.
Yeah, because I said it's the idea is if you were to take that, you know, organism and put it in any environment, it will adapt and survive. But once they reach like maturity, basically, they kind of I think the idea is they kind of stop. So they're kind of like as intelligent as they need to be for that environment. They're as, you know, if they're, you know, if it's a wetter planet, they'll, you know, have, you know, they'll be able to, you know, breathe underwater and they'll have webbed fingers. If it's lower gravity, they would have, you know, longer limbs and less dense musculature and things like that. They'll make themselves more fitting, which is why they take on another with a host, because that host already has this genetic predisposition for that sort of environment.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Which is why I'm not 100% on your it's dying approach, because it took on genetic material of humanity, and if humans can interact in this environment, so can it.
All right.
But it's still I never really thought of that, the fact that the air has been still and not really moving about as much and things like that. So, you know, always possible. But
the only reason I brought it up is because that's what they discussed in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I figured if there had to be an explanation, it's somewhere in the movie that there's some clue. So
yeah, but as if it, once you hit into aliens,
mm-hmm.
you'll notice a lot more of that like adaptation to the environment.
Okay.
And which is just cool.
I would imagine that there are all kinds of tricks that they will throw to ramp up the tension,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, all kinds of reversals, you know, all kinds of surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine that. I don't know. I'm energized to see Aliens, to see the next one.
Yeah. As I said though, Aliens 3. Eh.
Yeah.
Alien Resurrection. Eh.
Worse. Yeah.
So basically A-.
Yep.
C. D
minus D plus, like around that neck of the woods.
Which one is Winona Ryder in?
That's the fourth one.
Okay.
That's also the one that Joss Whedon has writing credit on.
Okay. All right.
But it's not good.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we will, I guess this will be an ongoing series of my
really exploration of films you should have watched 20 years ago.
My education. I don't know. I'm So, Aliens will follow. This is the Nerd Dash podcast. I'm Billy.
And I'm Eric. Thank you for listening.
That'll do. At thenerddash.com. You can follow me on Twitter @BillyDonahoe and subscribe to the Nerd Dash podcast on iTunes.